Miami Heat. They win 121-108. I will say, though, just as an aside, like, I am jealous of, this is a day that I am actually kind of jealous of, those that get to do like a national sports show. I know you probably are too, Chris, because as a college football fan, the SEC returns today. We're just not in a college football hotbed. But, like, to me, I'd kind of like to start there. I was even thinking, like, maybe talk about this Patriots-Raiders game tomorrow, but I feel like there's, like, no buzz there. There probably should have been, considering the Raiders are 2-0, but they are now injury-riddled. They got a, you know, they got the short week. They're traveling West Coast to East Coast. And I know you brought up a stat yesterday on Felgren Yes. Maz. The teams that have actually been doing that and playing the early game are 5-0.
5-0 this year.
This year. So, but I don't know. I feel like there's nothing there with that game. You know, maybe it'll be a little bit more interesting than I think. I thought it could have been after Monday night's game. But it's like, eh, I don't know. With all the injuries there, the Raiders coming here. Even the last time they came here, I think it was early 2014. It was like kind of a rock fight game, but I don't know. There's really not that much there. So I think we got to focus on the Celtics really for the brunt of the 3 hours. The people want to talk about it. I'm sure they want to blah me because I called this series over after two games.
You must have been feeling pretty good in the first half.
Oh, Chris, I mean, that was a complete no-show there. Like, that team was just bombing threes, bad body language. They looked like they were ready to pack it in and get the hell out of there, like they wanted to be out of the bubble. And then, you know, I don't know if you want to call it flipping the switch. I really think it comes down to two things. It's the Miami Heat shot them back into it in the third quarter. Celtics certainly got better defense, but it just comes down to this for the Celtics last night. On the offensive side, they stopped settling for jumpers. They attack the basket. And when you do that, Absolutely. You win. And what I loved about that the most, it wouldn't have mattered to me if I was watching two teams I don't even care about. If that was Nuggets and Lakers last night. I liked that for the Celtics last night, or I would love that overall, is because it's a blah and an FU to the nerds, who I also think have infiltrated the NBA, and there's this emphasis on, you know, the three ball Yep. and outside shooting. And look, I don't expect the NBA to go back to what it was 15, 20 years ago, and nor should it, but I'd like a little bit more balance. And you saw balance last night, and as they attack the rim and they get points in the paint, it does open up more threes. And
oops, sorry, that's me.
What's happening over there?
Yeah, I accidentally unmuted the sound on my laptop.
Oh, well, good thing it wasn't Pornhub. but that last night was like a nice FU to the nerds, who I think have kind of mucked up the NBA. And, you know, it was emphasis on like kind of old school basketball, and that's why the Celtics won that game, which was good, and they should. They should focus a little bit more on that. Nice night for Tice, great night for Tatum. And kudos to them, because I didn't think that they had it in them, especially with the way that that game started. That first half, yeah. I was like, wow, not only are they ready to go, like, this is a complete no-show, these a-holes. Like, yeah. They've actually proven me right. They have no heart. They don't want to be there. While I think they're more talented, they just didn't, like, not only are they going to lose to this Heat, they're just not even going to play. And thankfully, you know, they reset themselves at that halftime, and we'll get into some of the comments that were made yeah. by Kemba Walker, and he took a real leadership role last night, and good for him. But, you know, they live to fight another day, and that's a good thing.
Yeah, I mean, I think if there's one takeaway from the series, I think you mentioned it. It's attacking the paint, points in the paint. The two games they've won. So last night they had 56 points in the paint. And the other game they've won in the series, they had 60 points in the paint. And Jaylen Brown talked about this a little bit after last night's game, saying Miami does a good job with that zone and their length of making it look like you can't get in there, but you can still get in there. You just have to get in there with force and understand it's not going to be easy. And I think that in the restricted area last night, Jaylen Brown was 7 of 9, I believe. And when they were able to win earlier in the series, he was 7 of 12. So I think Jaylen Brown attacking the rim, and the Celtics in general, but Jaylen Brown in particular attacking the rim, is a tell for the Celtics in this series in terms of games that they're going to be able to win. You know, game 3 and game 5 last night. If they can get to the basket, if they can attack the basket, they're going to win. The other thing I'd say is it's amazing. You know, they had the 18-point first quarter, and then you come back and drop 41 in the third. And you know, I'm sort of stating the obvious here, but the game shifted on that 20-3 run.
Without question.
You go from down 9 up 8, and that was sort of the game right there. And what that taught me is the same thing I saw in the Toronto series, that when the Celtics are clicking, it's just easier for them to score than their opponents. Like, they just have more firepower. When they're clicking and moving the ball and attacking the rim and driving and kicking, and not just driving to drive, but driving to attack the basket, look at the basket, threaten a shot, it's easier for them to score. Like, it felt to me like it was difficult for Miami to score in that second half. Like, I'm like, oh, the Celtics score easily. They either get to the rim or Tatum knocks down a three or this guy knocks down a three. So they have more offensive firepower, but it's about being forceful and willful with it. And the other thing I'll say, I thought the most telling thing was Brad Stevens being mic'd up during that third quarter and during a timeout, sitting down with the team and saying, that's the first time in a couple of games I feel like I've seen Celtics basketball. That, I mean, that tells you, I think, you know, he's mic'd up. That's earnest. That's honest. That tells you that's a guy sort of like Bill Belichick in 2009 who's like, I just can't get this team to play the way they need to play. And finally, he's like, you guys are you're playing the way that I've been telling you to play. This is great.
Yeah, and they are capable of that. And that's what's been so frustrating. That's why I have written them off, because it's like, no, you're better than this. They are the more talented team than the Miami Heat. And the other thing with the Heat, too, is like that you're seeing, and it's been a regression just not from last night. It's been the last few games. Like, Jay Crowder's turned into Jay Crowder.
Yeah.
Maz, he's not a weapon. you know, and kudos to the defensive job that they did on guys last night like Tyler Hero.
Yep.
You know, I thought that was, you know, a very good job there. And so I'm still a little hesitant to say, well, now the series has turned. I do feel like there has been this thing, at least that I saw on Twitter last night. Now you're going to take that with a grain of salt. But now that's a series-changing game. This thing is now destined to go seven. Because they have more firepower, this is going to be the Celtics series. Do you believe that?
Here's what I would say. If the Celtics win game six, they're going to win the series. If Miami doesn't wrap this up in six, Miami loses.
Okay.
That's the way I feel.
Pretty bold.
That's
for
the
you.
Way that I feel about it. If it goes seven, Celtics win. And that was my pick from the beginning.
Yeah.
And I did say yesterday on Felgren Maz, I didn't think this series was over. I didn't think that they were done. If it goes seven, the Celtics are winning this series. Because nobody, when times are going good, laps it up like the Celtics. Like, if they get the momentum, they will ride that momentum. And if there's momentum the rest of the way and like no adversity and they win game six and you walk into game seven playing well, feeling good and playing with house money, they're going to win. And they are more talented and they have more firepower than the Heat. So I think game six for the Heat is a must win. If the Heat want to win the series, they have to win game six or they're not winning. The only thing that gives me a little bit of pause, and that would give me a little bit of pause today if I were a Celtic fan, is this. If you go back to game four, you can look at it as a Celtic fan and say, well, geez, you know, I know Tyler Hero is not going to score 37 points every game, so we're going to get him. So as a Celtics fan, flip that around. Do you think you're going to get 23 points and 17 rebounds from Tyson Cantor every game?
No, probably not. And that, you know, so look, I said going into the bubble playoffs that Tice could be a, you know, an underrated factor for the Celtics, and I don't expect him to have, what did he have last night, 15 and 13 rebounds? Like, that was a great night for him. But he's been kind of up until last night, I think, almost a detriment to the Celtics in this series. Is he going to have a game like last night, you know, in six if they push it to seven? Probably not. But I expected more out of him.
Sure.
So I just felt like...
But is he going to outplay Bam Adebayo? Are Cantor and Tice going to outplay or even play to a stalemate Bam Adebayo the rest of the way?
No, probably not, because I think last night for Tice and Cantor, too, because he was a factor, as, you know, in his limited minutes that he did play, that's kind of an anomaly. You know, the bigger sample size is how these guys have played in this series, and I know it's more limited for Cantor, and they've been more negative than anything else. So, how can you feel positive about that? Like, oh, no, now Tice is a factor just based on one game? I'm sorry. I'm not that guy.
That's the only thing that gives me sort of some pause about, because I know the Celtics, and my fear going into game six, and again, if they win game six, they're winning the series. But my fear going into game six is that they're going to be like, in typical Celtics fashion, oh, we figured this out. Oh, we cracked the code.
Yeah.
Oh, we got these guys.
So I do agree with you in that now the questions do come for the Miami Heat. Like, you know, you could say they had a game to burn, but, you know, there was no urgency from them last night, or they kind of like packed it in. I think that they were trying to settle on too many jumpers like the Celtics had prior in that second half. Certain guys have turned back into what they really are, like Jay Crowder. They haven't really been faced with this kind of adversity so far in the bubble playoffs, right? Like, they've only lost
three games.
So you're right. Like, now I do agree that now the pressure has shifted. I don't think the series has shifted, and now... But there is more pressure on Miami to win tomorrow night than there is the Celtics. Celtics are kind of playing with house money.
If Miami loses tomorrow night, they're losing the series.
Oh, all right.
I'm telling you right now that if they lose, if they don't wrap this up in six, they're going
to
lose.
Very bold prediction from our own Chris Gasper here of Channel 5. We'll go to you early and often because I know you guys do want to talk about this. And, you know, we have the Sports Up Celtics show at noon. So we'll probably bounce around a little bit, talk a little bit about that Patriots game tomorrow in this hour. But I know you guys want to talk about last night's game. The Celtics have life back from the dead. Joe in the car, you're first up this morning here on Gasper Murray. Hello, Joe.
Hey, what's going on, guys? Hey, just a quick observation on the game last night. I didn't catch the first half, but the second half, it just doesn't look like they're, like, having any fun together. It doesn't look like, you know, there's a lot of, like, camaraderie between the players. They just all look kind of miserable. Gordon Hayward, especially, he just, you know, it doesn't look like it. Nobody wants to be there. They're not even friends, but that's pretty much my take.
Thanks, Joe. Yeah, I've, from the game prior in that first half, last night, I don't know about you, Chris, but I look at Gordon Hayward and said, you probably should have went home because there's something else on your mind, and that's your first son. Like, he had looked just like he was a mannequin out there. Like, he's not dialed in at all. And I know that, you know, from a family standpoint, his wife said, look, stay. I got it, and kudos to her. But it felt to me, at least for a game prior, first half of last night, Gordon Hayward was not there mentally.
Well, I mean, I don't know a lot about this situation, but I know a little bit. So going home is not coming back here because she's not here. She's in Indianapolis. So with her family and his family. So if he's coming home, it's not coming back to Boston.
Oh, okay.
She has a support system there.
Is that reported anywhere, or you just know that?
I just know that.
Oh, scoops.
So it's like just so it's yeah, I have peeps out there. So that's what's going on. She's out there, so he would be going back to Indiana.
Huh.
Oh. I'm not, you know, I don't know how much of a difference that makes, but it's not like she's back here all by herself.
Okay.
She's out in Indianapolis with her family and his family.
But he was better in that second half. Is he getting too much time? Like, what have you thought of Hayward?
No, I thought he turned it on in that second. I mean, he had one bad pass to the corner, but he started to get. See, he's one of those guys who can dribble into.
I know exactly what pass you're talking about.
Yeah, into the teeth of the defense with purpose and attack the basket. Look at the basket in the middle of that zone and hit a mid-range jumper. I thought he was good in the second half, and I thought he actually played. I know he was minus two on the night. He wasn't great in the first half, but he found himself a little bit. And I thought his ability in the second half to be efficient, Smart, I thought Smart played a great game. You know, I know people think I hate Smart. I have been hard on Smart. I thought he was fantastic. I thought this was one of the typical Smart games where you look at the 3 of 9, and it's like that doesn't tell you how much this guy helped you win last night. It was one of those games that you all claim is every game he plays. But no, it was really one of those games last night. And I thought he was great. I thought the ability of Smart and Hayward to be efficient without having to take a bunch of shots and impact the game really helped the Celtics.
Well, they've done it before, these Celtics. Down 3-1, they had, yeah, I mean, you got to go back to the old days.
1981.
Yeah, 81. Way back in 1968, I remember when they did it as well. Yeah, I guess you don't need to sound like that much of a grandpa for 68, but you get my point. So can they do it here in this hell year of 2020? How are you feeling about the Celtics after last night's win over the Miami Heat? We get a Game 6 tomorrow night. If nothing else, we get a great sports day tomorrow. We get the Patriots and Vegas Raiders at 1, followed by the Brady Bucks at 4:25, which I still have an eye on. I know Chris does, too.
Oh, yeah.
And then at 7:30, you get Celtics Heat Game 6.
You left something out there. Mercifully, you get the end of the Red Sox season.
Oh, thank God.
Something to celebrate finally with the Red Sox.
Yeah,
mercifully,
right.
The last game. Yeah. The end.
Finally.
Yeah.
Like anyone's even paying attention to those a-holes at this point.
Well,
anyway.
I mean, you are. You know, baseball. I was listening yesterday, a spirited baseball reporter.
It's finally over, Chris. It's finally over. And that is the good in this right now.
You're not doing a Monday like season wrap? I think you guys should do a season wrap up.
Do you want to get punched? I don't care if that's an HR violation. You shut your filthy mouth. Got a couple open lines. You want to join us? Your thoughts on last night's game, 617-779-0985. It's Casper and Murray.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
You're listening to Gasper and Murray.
Fantastic chemistry.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Dragic, strong down the left side. Stumbles, bounce pass to Iguodala in the corner. Handoff, Robinson steps into that left side three. It is no good. That was a push shot. He forced it. Rebound, Tatum. Celtics can take their largest lead with a make. Up by 9. Tatum spinning on Iguodala. Step back. 19. Splash.
Ooh, good stuff there. But again, Daniel Tice is wide open in the paint then.
Really good night for Tatum, 31 points, 10 rebounds. Jaylen Brown, 28. And big night for Daniel Theis, 15 points, 13 rebounds, and the Celtics 121-108 win over the Miami Heat last night. We got a game six tomorrow night. Casper Murray, 98.5, the Sports Hub. So it was Tatum and Brown that really carried the load offensively last night for the Celtics. And Chris, like, it's a so, you know, part of that is Marcus Smart being content to be, well, just a role player. Does that carry on? Because I know that's been a concern here. Well, certainly in this series and many times with Marcus Smart and his tenure with the Celtics.
Yeah, I mean, I thought he was great last night. I really did. The numbers don't necessarily indicate the impact he had on the game. You know, 8 rebounds, 8 assists. I thought he was good distributing the basketball.
Well, he had the numbers he should have. You know what I mean?
He did. Like, you're right. No, you're right. And I think if he can play like that and be content to play like that, look, there might be a moment, there might be a game where they need him to revert back to game two against Toronto, Marcus Smart. That's entirely possible. And that's the hard thing about being a role player. I'm not saying that it's easy, but the thing about being a role player is that sometimes the requirement, the ask is for you to play like a star. Sometimes it's for you to get out of the way and let the stars be stars. And I think sometimes he has a difficult time calibrating which he's supposed to do. And I think, to be totally honest with you, he doesn't like getting out of the way because he feels like he doesn't have to because he's on the same level as these guys.
Which I think
it's like, you're not.
That's been maybe the biggest part of the problem in terms of the chemistry on this team is that Marcus Smart, I think, lacks self-awareness. That's the worst part of his game. It's just, and it's a mental thing. You know, I really love everything that he mostly does on the floor. It's just that when he gets off of it, he thinks he's on the level of Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. And I can understand, even though it doesn't make it right, why those two guys would look at me like, who are you? I don't care how long you've been here. Like, you're not on our level.
Yeah, like you're part of the supporting cast. You're not a leading man.
Yeah.
And you have to be able to accept that. You know, sometimes you're going to get that best supporting actor nod, and that's important.
To put it another way, if it's young girls in their 20s, Tatum is the 10.
Okay.
Jaylen Brown's like the 8.5.
Yep.
And Marcus Smart's like the good personality girl. Like, you know, she's just there. She's intangible. She's a party. She's fun. She can talk it up. She's got interest in all kinds of things. But yeah, you know, like, you know who your star players really are. You know what I mean? Elliot in Boston, you're next here on Gaspar Murray. Hello.
You know, everyone keeps telling me that Brad Stevens is a really amazing coach. And I like Brad Stevens. But why does it take 5 games to realize that Enes Kanter can give you 12 good minutes off the bench? Like, why does it take 5 games to realize that Kemba Walker is a very good pick-and-pop player? I mean, it's taken 5 games to decipher a high school defense in the zone. And I just look at this team, and even with the win, it's probably the most frustrating game to watch because this team can never stop playing defense. And Brad has to get that into this team that the offense runs through the defense. This is a team that likes to jack up threes. They like to celebrate. They like to put their threes up after they make a good three-pointer. But they have to get back on defense. And if this team loses this series, you'll have to look at Danny Ainge as to why he didn't add a gettable piece to his bench and why Brad Stevens was outcoached by Spoelstra here in this series.
Elliot, it's a good point, and thanks for the call. There is a sense of frustration to watching last night's game in terms of how they attacked that zone defense in Miami, and it's like, that's all it took? Just attack, 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 be in the paint, go to the rim, like that's all it took? It took you 5 games? He's got a point. Like, it is a little bit of frustration there watching that, I would think, for most people.
Yeah, I think, look, in a series, it's kind of like driving a car, right? You know, if you just put your hand straight on the wheel and don't move them and think you're going to drive straight, you're going to drive off the road. It's a constant series of adjustments. And I think it's easy to point out the Enes Kanter thing now, but if they had put Kanter in earlier in the series, he would have gotten murdered on pick and roll defense. And that's what Brad's worried about. He's trying to protect against that because for what Kanter gives you offensively and what he was able to do on the offensive end, which was to stop Miami from switching on the pick and rolls and trapping on the pick and rolls and keep them honest on the defensive end. If he gets dragged out on a pick and roll, he's a major liability. And so that's what it is. That's the chess match. It's like, you do this, now I do that. It's not as simple as saying, like, I'm just going to put Kanter in every game. Trust me, there'll be a Kanter answer that Spoelstra has for game six. Like, Kanter's not going to do the same thing. So I understand. For me, the more telling thing was Brad saying, in all sincerity, that's the first time I've seen Celtic basketball in a couple of games, tells me he couldn't get these guys or was frustrated that these guys weren't really doing what they're supposed to do or following instructions for whatever reason.
Kenny down in Atlanta. Hello, Kenny.
Hey, Murray.
Hey, what's up? How are you?
You owe me a Dr. Pepper, sir, for that quote. Your growth. I'm drunk. I'm gonna need a Dr. Pepper because I spit all mine out, sir. First, I'm gonna need a drink for that. But Gasper, you know I love you, man. Good to hear from you.
Thanks, man.
I'm with you. The two games that they had to win to me was 5 and 6. Because if they win tomorrow, Game 7 is a formality. So I definitely believe in that as well. So let's see if they can get Game 6. Love y'all. Mean it. Stay safe. I'll just, you know, chime in and listen like I always do. Murray, love you too, but you owe me a Dr. Pepper, sir.
Thanks, Kenny. I hope it didn't mess up.
Appreciate that.
Mess up the interior of your car, too. Yeah. Let's go to, well, that was, for those that don't know, don't listen to Felger Mass with any regularity, that's how I look at the marriage between Cam Newton and the Patriots. And Bill Belichick this year was, you know, like kind of like the last couple of people at the bar at the end of the night. I'm drunk, you're gross, let's go. Like, that's how that they got together. It wasn't like a big plan. He wasn't, though. That wasn't what, truly the one that he wanted.
Well, they had been talking throughout the offseason. I think it was more so the way you're describing it. Let me just ask, in this analogy, and if you continue with these analogies, which I do find funny, but I know we're going to get calls and get in trouble. But just in this analogy, who's the drunk one and who's like the gross one? Because I think it's different than you'd think. I think Cam's the one like, I'm drunk, you're gross, Bill. Fine, I'll take your crappy offer. I don't think it's Bill. I think when you're saying it, you're saying that Bill's the one settling. I think Cam was the one who settled.
Well, someone settled. One of them did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think Cam was like, okay, I'll take your insulting contract and play quarterback for you because there's nobody else out here who's willing to take me home.
And that's also something I've been saying for years. That actually stems from, I changed the lyrics to, it's Cameron. Hey, Ma.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm drunk. You're gross. Let's move. And we gonna hunt or not? I mean, for years, that's what I've changed those lyrics to. I'm a sick person. I make no apologies. Joel in the van. Hopefully it's not down by. Yeah. Ah, hello, Joel. That's
hopefully, right. Hopefully it's not a windowless van
down by the river.
No. All right. So two things. I don't know if you guys noticed in the first. I think it was the first quarter. Kemba Walker had like driven to the lane. Marcus Smart was calling for it in the post, and Kemba got fouled. But I noticed Kemba Walker was, like, shaking his head, and Marcus Smart was kind of like – he looked like he was visibly upset. So I don't know if that stems from, like, Game 2 or – you know, I'm not sure what's going on there. That's one thing I think they might have, like, a clash of heads or, you know –
Yeah, Joel, thanks for the I'm not under the belief that like whatever personality clashes that this team has with each other, and I think that's part of it is Smart, Brown, Tatum, we know that one. Marcus Smart not knowing his role, maybe it's something going on with Kemba Walker too. Like there's still that none of that's fixed. I still think that exists, and it just goes, I think when they it speaks to what you always say, winning is the best deodorant.
Winning
right?
is the ultimate deodorant.
Yeah, and so like, you saw it in the first half that they were sniping at each other. They're sniping at the refs. That's where it was like, oh, this isn't fixed, and they're ready to go home.
Yeah, I'll tell you, there was a play, even when they were up, I think it was late in the game in the fourth quarter, shot clock running down. Jaylen Brown gets the ball top of the key. Shot clock's running down. So he's not saying, like, I'm the man, I'm going to ISO. He's saying, I'm going to ISO because we got to get a shot up. He starts driving. He beats his guy. I think he's going to get to the rim. And Marcus Smart goes, like, diving into the paint and brings his guy over, and that guy takes it from Brown, and you could just see the look on Brown's face was like, dude, come on,
right.
Again, like, what are you doing? You know, so there's still some, I think, off court and on court chemistry issues in terms of everybody, you know, functioning at the right level and there being sort of complete comedy on the court. But I still think that they are the more talented team. And when they win, these things get minimized. When they lose, I think they get magnified.
More of your thoughts on last night's Celtics win over the Miami Heat, pushing in a Game 7. The Eastern Conference Finals will get tomorrow night. If you want to join us, 617-779-0985. More of your calls coming up next here on Gaspar Murray.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
This is Jasper and Murray.
You will listen.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Yeah, I just wanted to be myself, especially in the defensive end. I was passive the last couple of games. My job is to pressure the big, especially make them uncomfortable. They play so many handbags. That's what I had to do. Pressure him, be a rim protector, get the rebounds. And they're a great offensive rebound team, especially Bam, Jimmy Butler. They go in there for the offensive rebound for a second shot. First half, they got, every time we made a little run, they got offensive rebound, open shot, layup. So they'll go for the second half. Just everybody rebound. You could tell from the first, second, and third quarter, everybody ran in there for every rebound. We didn't give up one loose ball, and we just, like Coach said, we played Celtics basketball.
It's not the greatest sound there coming out of the bubble, but that is Celtics big man, using air quotes there. Daniel Tice, who had a big night last night in the Celtics win, 121-108 over the Miami Heat, 15 points. But talking about the rebounds there, how the Celtics really out-rebounded the Miami Heat, especially in that second half. He ended up with 13 in the Celtics win. I thought he'd be a factor at times throughout the playoff run. He certainly was last night. Considering the bigger sample size, it felt like the anomaly. But I now wonder, after last night's performance, Chris, is Heat coach Eric Spoelstra looking at Daniel Tice and saying, okay, now we actually have to game plan for him? Or is he looking at him and pulling to Mr. Burns and saying, ooh, the Germans, ooh. you like me, like that's a one-off, or he is going to be a factor in the remainder of the series?
I think that's a one-off.
Yeah.
I do. I mean, I just don't think if you're the Celtics, you can go into it and think that you're going to get 23 points and 17 rebounds combined from Tice and Cantor. I think that's kind of, again, if you're thinking that, then you must have been thinking that Tyler Hero was going to score 37 points in every game. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
In other words, you can't have it both ways. I think we all knew Hero wasn't going to drop 37 in every game. That was a one-off, even though he's good. So if you were saying that, like, oh, I feel good about the Celtics because, you know, Hero can't do that every game. Well, you can't really expect Tice and Cantor to play that well every game, like 23 and 17. That's not going to happen.
Kevin in South Boston, your thoughts on last night's game. Go ahead.
Hey, good morning, guys. Love your show. Thanks for your honest insight on the green tea, on the Celtics and all that. So I'm a lifeline Celtics fan.
Cool.
And I had 2 points from last night's game, just in general. Just in the first half, I just was watching that game, and I was just kind of disgusted because I just felt like they were just playing so soft. And I thought the person that came in and helped them, you know, was Cantor. You know, he had that – he came in and started, you know, bullying guys inside, and he gave them that physicality. And I felt like that jumpstart them to the end of the first half into the second half. And then my second point is that I feel like the NBA is just getting almost unwatchable because of all the flopping going on and just how people are just acting out there on these fouls.
I totally agree. Yeah. I mean,
Kevin, thank you for the call.
I mean, Goran Dragic is painful to watch. I think Kemba's started doing it now. He's throwing his head back every time. Tatum's doing it. Everybody, anytime somebody, you know, literally blows on them, is like flipping their head back. It's become a real problem for the NBA.
What was the one? It was Dragic and Kemba Walker before the end of the first half. And Jeff Van Gundy lost his mind, and rightfully so, on TV, being like, we've been here for 6 minutes. They're looking at this effing play.
Yeah.
It wasn't a flagrant. It was, what do they call it?
They call it, it was like a dead ball technical.
Yeah. That kind of stuff. I even tweeted at the time, like, this is so boring, and as bad as the Celtics were playing in the first half, like, what? Like, I'm going to tune in anyway, even if I didn't have the gig.
Yeah.
But, like, this kind of stuff, if you're a casual fan or you're just watching this because it's playoff basketball and you kind of don't pay attention all that much, if you had to sit through that, you're like, I'm good here. I'm either going to bed or I'm watching something else. I'll tune in Netflix. Like, they're killing the sport with that kind of thing. They're effing replays.
Yeah, there's too many replays. There's no question about that. I think that there are too many replays. And I'll be honest with you, I thought the hostile act foul they called that fouled
that's out. The one I'm thinking. Yeah,
Goran Dragic went the knee to the, that was a layup, and literally Tice, Tice like threw his groin into Dragic's knee. Like, he literally leaped like groin first into the guy's knee. I'm like, what are we doing? Like, the rules, I this is one of my problems with all sports. It's not just basketball. I feel like the officials are always sort of now looking for the most complicated, look how smart I am call, like interpretation of the rules.
I know the minutia of the rules.
Yeah, exactly. Instead of just like calling the game, like they're always looking for that. Actually, in this situation, it's this. And if you turn it 30 degrees on its axis this way, it should be this. So here's this rule. So actually, this guy going up for a layup committed not only an offensive foul, but a hostile act on this guy's balls. And it's like, no, that the other guy was already in the air and the defender literally threw his groin into the guy's knee. And it's like, oh, hostile act. I'm like, what are we doing here? I give Tice credit. I mean, he was willing to sacrifice his reproductive capacity to win the basketball game. I give him credit for that. But I mean, come on.
Yeah, what did you make of this and the game overall last night? We got Brian Robb, Boston Sports Journal, normally producing the show for us. Give us your thoughts, B-Rob.
Yeah, to Chris's point, I think that was the first ever makeup review with when Dragic got Tice in the nuts there, because they had missed the play before that. Tice fouled Dragic on three, and it was a terrible call.
That was a terrible call.
And they didn't review. So I think that was the makeup there, but I agree with you guys, Hunter. I mean, the reviews, the how many of those, especially early in the game like that. It's one thing, it's the last 2 minutes of the game. It's like, okay, get it right. But to do that in the first half when you had like three or four that went on for 3 or 4 minutes at a time, that's just, like you said, that's just a bad product.
So we get a game six. Are you with Chris in that if the Celtics win tomorrow night, they're going to win this series?
Yes.
Oh, all right.
I mean, don't let the Celtics win. Don't let the Celtics win tomorrow night. Don't let the Celtics win tomorrow night, baby, or they're going to the finals.
And Hayward, I think it's just going to, he started to look a little better. The longer the series goes, probably the better that ankle feels and the bigger of a problem he could become for the Heat there. So I think that's the scary part, too.
That's a great point. And the longer that mustache gets, the more power he has.
Every time I see him, like it's a look that works for him. Maybe I'm kind of envious because I like.
I think so. I kind of think he looks like the Ben McAdoo of basketball. Remember that Giants coach?
Every time that's just when I'm your Huckleberry. Get me the ball. I'll throw it up. He looks like an old dandy, like that old timey.
He kind of, you know what? There's a little bit of a Sam Elliott vibe there.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like an old cowboy type. Yeah. Thing. Like what's the one with? I'm thinking about I'm your Huckleberry with Val Kilmer. Is
I have no idea what we're talking about.
Someone he knows. I would say tweet me, but see what happened. Yeah, it's all a matter of time before I lost it with this.
Yeah, I know.
For some reason here at Beasley Media Group, they've decided to have us on a new server, and so the internet like doesn't work. And try doing a three, sometimes four during the week, hour radio show with not having the internet. Oh boy! Like, see, now we're more secure on the internet, but you can't use the internet. Maybe that's why it's so secure. Nick in the car on Jay Crowder, who was terrible last night for the Miami Heat. Go ahead, Nick.
How you doing, guys? And I think you're thinking of Tombstone.
Thank you. That's what I was thinking.
Yeah, no worries. So you were talking earlier about Marcus Smart thinking he's better than he probably is, but nobody's got anything on Jay Crowder for thinking they're better than they are. And watching him just hoist up three after three, I was screaming at the TV, pass the ball to Jay all night.
Oh, Nick. Yeah, and that's why, like, what was he shooting, I think, prior to this series? Like 44%?
He was shooting
three.
Really well.
He was
their
best three-point shooter.
Yeah. Was he?
Going in, yeah, he was like up to, I think, 44, 45% in the first two rounds.
I would say I'd try to look for the stat, but, you know, no internet. Because I saw someone tweet this last night that it was, I think it was around 43, 44%. Like B-Rob just said, he was their best three-point shooter coming into the series. But now it's down to, like, 11. Like, he's turned into what he is. He's Jay Crowder. He's not that good. Well, he had an inflated ego when he was here and thought he was better than he was. And it's now, I think, kind of apparent with the Miami Heat, too.
No, you're absolutely right. So I think in this series he's shooting, it looks like it's 26.2%, believe it or not. He was 0 for 6 last night. But the Heat, in general, I saw this stat this morning. Over the last 13 quarters of play, they're shooting 24.8% from three.
So maybe it was him in a vacuum over the last two games. It was around like 11 or 12%. Again, if I had the internet at my fingertips, I'd try to find that for you. But, you know, we're now secure. Everything's so...
This is cool because now this is like watching like an 80s movie. You know, you ever watch an 80s movie and you're like, oh, the entire conceit of this plot would be negated by current technology. Yes. Like, it's like, oh, you know, I thought you were here and like you called me and I didn't get your call. And it's like, but they just text them and then the movie'd be over. Now, so this is like watching somebody try and do like a 1980s sports talk radio show. So this is actually interesting because, you know, you watch those movies and it's like, oh, I can't find a payphone. And then the movie goes on for another hour and a half. And you're like, but if you just had a cell phone, you'd call them and the movie would be over after 20 minutes.
That's all right. I'm confident in my abilities. We can get this done here between now and
Are you? Okay. Yeah, I was going to say, this is really going to test your... You should take this as a challenge the radio expert, the radio savant that you are. You've honed your skills all these years to be able to do a show old school.
Yeah, I got no problem with it. It just makes it a little bit easier if I had the tools at my fingertips.
But back in the 80s and early 90s, they didn't have these tools. So they had to do it. So this is like, you know, when I worked at the Globe, Bob Ryan, like once a year, would decide he was going to go on a Celtics road trip and be the beat writer. He was going to write the running game story, the notes, you know, just to show he could still do it.
Yeah.
So this is kind of like your Bob Ryan moment. No internet. You just got to show you can still do it old school. The kid still has it.
The kid definitely still has it. There's no problem there. We have our long commercial-free segment coming up that will segue into the Sports Hub Celtics show. I know. We've already been talking about the Celtics, but, you know, we have to play the imaging and all that kind of stuff. Anyway, that said, let's pause and talk about the Patriots just for a moment as they get ready to take on the Las Vegas tomorrow at Gillette Stadium. That's next here on Gasper and Murray.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
This is Gasper and Murray on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
I think Coach Gruden has built the team, specifically the offense, into the style of offense that he's always coached. He's obviously done a very good job of it. He has good players at every position. I think he's maybe not there, but I think he's pretty close to having what he wants from a personnel standpoint. You know, obviously, you know, Williams was a big loss for him, him not being in there, but they, you know, from a personnel standpoint, I think he has what he wants to run the offense that pretty much he's always run and run well. You know, Coach Gruden's been successful every place he's been offensively, from, you know, Philadelphia to Oakland to Tampa, and, you know, now back to Oakland again, and again, a fairly short amount of time. So it's a proven system. He absolutely knows what he's doing. He puts a lot of pressure on the defense, and as he's gotten the personnel that he needs to, you know, to have a full complement of an arsenal there, you know, I think you're seeing the results of it, you know, 30-some points a game so this year. So he's, I think he's got things, you know, getting them the way he wants them. I'm not saying he's there yet, or it feels like he's there yet, but he's certainly moving it in the right direction.
I mean, I don't expect Bill Belichick to come out and say John Gruden's in over his head and he should still be a broadcaster, but that felt like a little bit much to me. It's Gasper Murray, 98.5, the Sports Hub. It's Patriots. You always got to say it that way. The Raiders tomorrow at Gillette Stadium, 1 o'clock kickoff. You can't go, I can't go, Chris can't go. But, you know, we'll be here and watching it. I don't know. I don't think there's that much buzz for this game, Chris. I tried to convince myself that there was going to be, considering how the Raiders have played these first couple of weeks. But, you know, they beat up on a bad Panthers team. And, you know, they did beat the Saints in their home opener on Monday night. Boy, that place looks awesome, that Allegiant Stadium in Vegas.
Oh, the Death Star?
Yeah.
I love it. I love the name, the whole everywhere. Thing. It looks really cool.
It does. But Saints, you know, Drew Brees looks cooked. Like, I think that was kind of more about the Saints than anything else. Like, yeah, their ground attack is great. Josh Jacobs, who's a little dinged up, is an excellent running back. That Darren Waller, a tight end, might be one of, if not the best tight ends in the game right now.
Yeah, he's playing really well.
I don't know. Man, John Gruden, that whole Gruden thing, like, I'm not buying it yet. I said it when he came back, he'd be in over his head. That program's kind of been a mess. Yeah, they're 2-0, but I don't know. This team's coming in banged up. They don't have Henry Ruggs. They don't have Richie Incognito, who they put on IR. They don't have Trent Brown, so I don't know if they're going to be able to run the ball that well. The whole West Coast to East Coast thing, like, this just seems like a spot to me where, as much as I try to talk myself into thinking this is going to be a decent competitive game tomorrow, I think the Patriots roll.
Yeah, it's an interesting game because I think the Raiders are better than people think, but I don't know if we'll see that because they had the Monday night game. It's a short turnaround, and they're so banged up. And I think one of the things you see with the Raiders, and I know we play that Bill Belichick clip about, you know, he doesn't think that Gruden has it quite where he wants it yet, but they're moving in the right direction. I couldn't agree more. And the difference of getting it to where you want it is depth. And I think their frontline players at this point are pretty good. But what you can tell with a team like that, the first sign is you don't have any depth. And so when guys start to get banged up and you don't have this guy or that guy, then all of a sudden you're like, who's this behind them? Who are they going to put out there? And that's what I see with the Raiders. And I think overall they're just too banged up to really give the Patriots much of a game. The one thing I do want to say about it, though, is that I feel like this is a good test for the Patriots' run defense, because I think the Raiders, even with what's banged up on their offensive line, are going to come in here and try and run the football. I think they probably feel that they can run the football against the Patriots, because that's been one of the areas with the Patriots inside. You know, how good are the linebackers? Adrian Phillips is sort of a hybrid linebacker safety. He's undersized. Bentley's a thumper, but I don't think he necessarily moves well in space. And then Adam Butler, you know, Byron Coward, Lawrence Guy's good. But the Patriots, to me, Jim, just feel thin at that interior defensive line. And if I'm Gruden and the Raiders, I come in here and I'm going to hammer away and see, can these guys stop the run?
If they were to pull off the upset tomorrow, you don't even think it's that big of a deal for the Patriots.
I don't. I really don't. I mean, I know people are riding high off the Seattle thing, and Seattle, for me, too, raise the expectations for the Patriots season. But I don't think that's all washed away if they lose this game. The Raiders are 2-0, and I think they're a little better than people are giving them credit for. The Patriots are a little banged up. David Andrews not going to play. What did the offense and the running game look like last year without David Andrews?
Oh, it was terrible.
Exactly.
Oh, I thought he was one of their biggest losses last year.
So we don't know how that's going to go. The Patriots are a little banged up themselves. Isaiah Wynn's now on the injured list with his calf. So if they lose this game, my point is it's not a division game. I still think they could end up winning the division at 10-6.
Yeah, I think my expectations haven't changed all that much. 9-7, 10-6. I just, with the, now that the hype train has left the station with a game that they lost last week.
Yeah.
But I'm with you. The expectations were raised with the way that they played against Seattle. I just feel like that would take a massive hit if they were to lose to this Raiders team.
You think so?
Yeah, I do.
Really?
Yeah, because I think they're, I don't know. I know they're 2-0. I just don't think that Raiders team's that good. I'm not a Derek Carr guy.
Okay.
I know, every once in a while, he will wow you with a couple of passes. It's like, oh, okay. But. Yeah, I don't know. He makes still too many mental mistakes for my taste. And look, the Patriots have some real holes, too, and not just personnel-wise. Like, you know, after a couple of games, they have the worst rated defense on first and second down. So there is some concern there, like you say, with the
Raiders. That's a nifty stat. I didn't know that one.
The Raiders' ability to run the ball. Yeah, like, I mean, a lot of that came from last week against Seattle. Like, the defense has some real issues, especially in that front seven. But I don't know. The Patriots, with this spot at home, short week for the Raiders. I think they're going to, it'll probably be a rock fight for the first half. Then the Patriots end up winning like by 10, 14 points, something like that.
I will say this. I do think that the Raiders are a team on the defensive side of the ball that Josh McDaniels can scheme around. Like, they will have a couple of things in the game plan that will completely flummox the Raiders. They will score points based on strategy, not necessarily talent, on offense at times, and that could be the difference in this game. But for me, you know what's more interesting than this game? Just looking at the Patriots overall and the idea that they could add something, where should they add? Now people are saying linebacker. I see Snacks Harrison is out there saying he wants to play for Seattle. Bill Belichick's always loved that type of big-time run defender. Remember Ted Washington was here.
In 05,
Yeah, right. Who's the other guy? Keith Traylor was another guy who was here. That type, I feel like that's a real need for them. As I mentioned, linebacker and then wide receiver. I mean, Cam Newton, it's like, put down the Kool-Aid, man. Like, we get it. You love it here. Bill loves you. It's been great. I'm glad you're here. I wrote in April you should be here. But the answers are in the locker room. Play a few more games for me, Cam. Like, let's see how you feel 8 games into the season. Whether the answers are in the locker room with this receiving core.
You hear that sound, everyone? It just sounded like this. Boo. That's the powering down of Chris Gasper's brain, because we've reached noon, and that means the college football is kicking off. So how he's, you know, is he going to be paying attention to the show from now until 2? Not as much, because college football is starting. The SEC has returned. With that, before we get to the headlines on the Sports Hub Celtics show, let's go to Brett, who has a college football call here on the line. Go ahead, Brett.
Hey, yeah, I knew Chris is a big Seminoles fan, and I just wanted to get a quick thought on, you know, his team and having their coach coach from the couch tonight. It should be interesting.
Yeah, for those who don't know, Mike Norvell, the first-year coach of Florida State, tested positive for COVID, and he can't be on the sideline tonight against Miami. So,
but is he still being able to coach via text?
Honestly,
or something?
I didn't think so. But there are ways around that. I guess you can communicate with your staff members. But yeah, I'm not confident at all about tonight. Frankly, as long as James Blackman is our quarterback, I'm not confident about anything. So it's gonna be another beatdown at the hands of the Canes tonight. The only saving grace, Jim, is that for most of my life, the Florida State Miami game was on my birthday weekend, and it was always miserable. So at least we get the misery out of the way early.
All right. So I see some of you still hanging and want to talk about the Celtics. We will do just that as we turn to the Sports Hub Celtics show with their 121-108 win over the Heat last night as they extend the Eastern Conference Finals. We'll do that right after the Sports Hub headlines here on 98.5 Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.